Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Beth, who is a many-time veteran of the Visiting Monk program here at the monastery and is with us this afternoon to talk about that program. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being willing to participate in this way.
Absolutely.
So, I thought we have talked about the Visiting Monk program on the Good News before, but not for quite some time. So I thought we might just start by maybe kind of running through what that practice opportunity entails.
Yes, absolutely. For me, the Visiting Monk program has entailed coming to the monastery. For the first couple of times, I only came for 2 weeks, but then availed myself of the opportunity to come for an entire month.
Which has since kind of become, I think actually you were one of the pioneers, if I'm not mistaken, the kind of helping us to even really begin the program. So now we're really, really essentially asking folks to make that month commitment because, and I'm sure you'll talk about this, what an amazing thing it is to be here for 4 consecutive weeks.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, crucial to the overall experience. It's not even double the experience, it's exponential.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, because the first 2 weeks have their own sort of sets of things going on. And then, you know, the next 2 weeks is really, it can be such a deepening, can't it?
Yes, yes. And for me, what I experienced the first time I stayed for 4 weeks was a complete sense of timelessness that I couldn't even fathom what 4 weeks was. So it really put me in the present right away.
Uh-huh. So if I'm following, almost like 4 weeks is long enough that ego can't really wrap its little head around it, if it had one. And so
right. It
kind of, yeah, that's really true, because it can't really kind of decide, okay, how am I going to, basically it can't ride it out. So it allows
Yes. The
human to really just go, all right, I'm essentially living at the monastery right now. I'm a monk.
Exactly.
It's
so unbelievable to conditioning that it's been put in this situation. And your heart is jumping for joy, and conditioning just is so disabled. It's what?
Yeah, that's a great description. Yeah, it's so disabled, and the heart is just jumping for joy.
Yeah.
So some of the particulars of the program are things like daily guidance.
Yes.
Which I, you know, having participated in it, I get to be part of offering the guidance. And to me, it's just such a great way of kind of touching in every single day on what's going on. It creates a continuity to the experience, I've heard people say.
Yes, it absolutely does create a continuity. And what I found going back and listening to the recordings that were made each time I went into guidance is that often I would repeat the same things, only differently.
Yeah.
It was like the same concept, but it was from a different angle, or it was in a deeper way, or it was in a way that I just hadn't seen before. So even though sometimes my themes were repeated, it just added a sense of like, oh, I really do get it.
Yeah, well, and it really it touches on something that we're really looking at in practice right now, especially just finishing up this most current email class, of then you have those recordings to listen to. Because I project the things that someone is going to see in the middle of a month at the monastery, as we said a minute ago, essentially living as a monk, you're going to get to places that are much more challenging to get to kind of out in your daily life where the heart is not so supported. And so it would be so easy for conditions to cover over, you know, all the things you saw, but you've got it right there on your recording.
Yes, that's absolutely true. When I've come out of the monastery and have thought, okay, wow, so much has happened and I feel different and I feel like I've got all these tools and I feel like, I've got it covered now. When I realize that I don't have it covered and conditioning's come back in my everyday life, I get to go back to those recordings and go, oh, that's right. Oh, right. I remember how this bamboozles me or ambushes me or,
Yeah, that's because it's so perfect. I've got it covered. Of course,
yes.
In one sense, we always have it covered, you know, that no matter what's going on, we're okay. We're fine. We're completely fine. And in another sense, you could say we never have it covered in the sense of there's never vacation from being in the present moment because the minute we're not here, conditioning is.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. And all the other support that's there, certainly one of the reasons I went from 2 weeks to 1 month was because at that time you guys were offering the daily guidance for the month-long people, and I knew that I wanted that. But what I didn't realize is that you also get the visiting monk coordinator check-in three times while you're there, the first couple days, and then a mid-check-in, and then a end-of-the-stay check-in, which was just so wonderful, too.
Well, that's really nice to hear. Yeah, that's another, I would imagine, another way to carry the continuity through the experience, huh?
Yeah, because the visiting monk coordinator is really focused on how are things going here and how do you want to carry this back out into your everyday life once you leave the monastery. And not that that's not also part of everything else, but it's really focused.
Yeah, really focused on that way of assisting you to kind of put the experience in the context of your entire life.
Yes, exactly. And of course, just living with the schedule day to day of, okay, I know where I have to be and I know generally what's going to be called upon,
mm-hmm.
and then never knowing what's actually going to happen.
Right. That's the best part of monastic living. Yeah. It's very,
you know, where am I going to be today? Is it going to be in the bathroom? Is it going to be in the, well, you're always in the kitchen, but,
right.
You know, am I going to be at the wood pile? Am I going to be cleaning out swamp coolers? Am I going to be, you know, and just being surprised and in wonder and awe at all the different things that I find that I can do that I'm adequate to.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That so many things that, you know, because, you know, most of us, or not me, but the average person has a job, and that's what they do. And so don't get a whole lot of exposure to, you know, all these other things. And that's one of the things that's such a gift of monastic living, is that we all get to do everything. And I do love that piece of it, too, of that, in a way, you know exactly what your day is going to entail. In another way, you have no idea, because you don't know the particulars of it.
It is, and in a way that really does help when I get out of the monastery to have a schedule for my day that says, okay, I know generally this is, you know, pretty much what I'm going to look at doing,
mm-hmm.
and then I don't have any idea what's going to happen or what's going to come up in the middle of the day that might push me one way or the other and go, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. It's such good practice for being okay with that and, as you say, realizing you're completely adequate to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, I think, at the monastery, because with the privileged environment and that sense of course, encouraged to ask questions if you really don't understand what's happening, but it's also the faith or the belief of everyone being born adequate to their lives that the monastery offers you to then within the parameters or the guidelines of the task that you're given,
mm-hmm.
to do it from a life perspective.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's it. I think that's actually one of the greatest gifts of the Visiting Monk program that doesn't really happen on a week-long retreat, partly because on most retreats we're not doing working meditation, but on some retreats there is that opportunity as well. But that that gift of bringing mindfulness to activity, so that which makes it much easier to translate into our daily lives, but also that piece that you just said that has really been incorporated into the program in the last couple of years, that a very conscious part of the training that happens is that people get to learn about things like practice principles and so the how of doing things and the sort of the principle behind the how. And that makes it so much, it's not just, okay, so we wash the dishes this way, which you may or may not wash the dishes that way when you get home. But the principles and the attitude of mind behind it are absolutely applicable to everything you do in the rest of your life.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. And just the sense that you get of yourself being then adequate to carry that out, no matter how, you know, like you're saying, how you do it, but bringing that mindfulness to it that makes you go, you know, if I do it this way, it's going to be fine. If I do it the other way, it's going to be fine also.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it just strikes me that the program is such a win-win, because I hear folks who come through and are in the program just talk about what an incredible deepening of their practice it is, and sort of an opportunity unique in itself, not one that you can get in any other way. And I also know that it's an amazing benefit to the community as well, to have people coming and really essentially offering that level of deep practice, because the willingness to do, you know, it takes a lot for someone to rearrange their lives to come here for a month, especially if they come more than one time. And so that deep practice that people offer to the whole community, you know, the monastic community, the neighbors who join us for groups, that sort of thing, it's just such a ripple effect, kind of a benefit for everyone, I think.
Well, for me, that's wonderful to hear also, from how it is for you guys to see it when visiting monks come and participate in it. I can't emphasize enough that, you know, the 4 weeks and how much that really gets past a lot of the conditioning barriers that just you have no idea that there's so much to gain from it.
Yeah. It brings them up and it helps you move through them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
truly.
You're going to see conditioning. In a month of monastic training, you're going to see conditioning that you wouldn't necessarily see in a week.
Exactly.
Longer. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So not necessarily for the faint of heart, but definitely worth it.
But exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I can't say enough, and I can't wait to be there next year.
Yay. We're looking forward to it as well.
Good.
All right. Good. Well, we're getting we're a couple minutes over. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Beth, before we end?
Just deep gratitude to you and the other monks and Sherry and Ashwini and everybody who participates in making the Visiting Monk Program a sheer delight.
Yeah, very much returned. Many thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Beth. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
You say good afternoon, and it's pitch black dark.
I know.
What's
I know.
Wrong
I should
with
say,
that? Isn't
I should
it?
Say good night.
Good night. Okay, or good grief, or something like that.
Especially for those folks on the East Coast and in Europe, where it's probably always nighttime when we talk to them.
Oh, when we talk to them, yes. I'm glad you cleared that up.
Yes.
So the Visiting Monk Program?
Yes.
Sounds like a good deal, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Sounds great.
Yeah, it is. And I did want to underline what Jen said, how much we all who are around practice more appreciate when people come. Sometimes people have a feeling of kind of a worry that I'm more trouble than I'm worth, or that sort of thing. Because it can feel so, I don't know what I'm doing, and I seem always to be putting my foot in the wrong place, and that sort of thing. But what Jen was expressing is the heart of it, to know that someone is in a place in their practice that's what they want to do inspires all of us.
Yes. Great.
It's that kind of image of breathing new life into.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of like you live in one place and then you travel to a place completely different, and all of the beliefs and assumptions get kind of shaken up.
Oh,
and so
right.
having new people with us,
yeah.
we get to see ourselves in practice and what we're doing and how we're training and all of that in a new light. And so we get the benefit of deepening our practice as well. It really is a good deal all the way around.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when we have new callers on Open Air. How
well,
wonderful
excellent
that is.
Point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. It's exact. Nice. Way you slipped that in there. That's very good. So, in other words, if there are people out there who are who would be first-time callers but are shy, and that sort of thing, there's a nice little encouragement to join us because we all benefit so much.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a first-time month-long month.
Yeah.
Visiting month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I bet you have some announcements.
I do. Exactly. Took the words out of my mouth. The New Year's retreat with you, Sherry, is coming up.
It is.
Yearly tradition. It's held in beautiful Santa Sabina in Marin County.
Mm-hmm.
And now's the time to sign up if you haven't already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In fact, it would be good to sign up now. It's getting to be quite a big crowd of people who will be
yes.
converging on Santa Sabina.
Yes.
And if somebody can't come for the entire retreat, they can come and be with me in our Mountain View Zen Center in Los Altos on December 1st.
Yes, Sunday, December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
What do you really want for the holidays?
Mm-hmm.
That's a deal.
We're going to find out, and then we're going to have it.
Wonderful.
Yep.
That's the best.
Yes, exactly.
And there is still time to sign up for a guidance day on December 7th. Monthly donors can speak one-on-one with an experienced practitioner about anything going on in their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this is available at schedule.livingcompassion.org.
You know, Michael, when you say that, it reminds me of something that occurred to me when Beth and Jen were talking, that kind of opportunity, that individual guidance, working
yeah.
with Zen awareness coaches,
yeah.
Or being a visiting monk,
yeah.
what those share is that ability to have support for focusing specifically on your own practice.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we go on retreat, we're with a lot of people, and we're all looking at whatever it is. And, of course, yes, we're looking at our own issues. But we share the spotlight with a lot of other folks. And
yeah.
having that opportunity to just talk about what's going on with me and have somebody reflect that and support it and guide and make suggestions and that sort of thing is a very special opportunity.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
mm-hmm.
indeed. Group of one.
Group of one. Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound. And again, as you were talking about, Sherry, how helpful it is when people register at talkshoe.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You can mix it up a little bit.
Yes. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get talking here.
Mm-hmm.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, my gosh. Sherry and Michael, it's Tracy.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's funny, I am amazed I got on the show, and I've tried so many times, and I am a bit conditioned right now, and so I was reluctant to calling.
Uh-huh. Although, as we know, it's the perfect time.
It's the perfect, and it's a process that I get, I fall into very regularly, so it's probably, I'm sure it's just perfect. And it's, should I just go ahead and launch?
Launch.
Launch. So it's the process I run into about, I just call it the one in me who prepares and just wants and knows what's possible and just gives it all she has. And then what's on the other side is someone who just feels really depleted. And so, you know, talking to my mentor, and I was just on a little walk and kind of giving myself the, you know, a little pep talk of, you know, do less than what you should and more than what you want to. And it's the content of it is today I had a really big work presentation. I worked out of town today and I've been really working super hard to get ready for it. And at the end of it, I just thought, oh, my goodness, I just put so much more into it than when I felt like came back. But I don't know that really. It's just some of the energy behind it. Mm-hmm. And my birthday was yesterday, and on Sunday I had a party at my house, a giving and receiving party for the Africa Project. And so I just put a lot into that, and it was just a really incredible night, but a lot of energy went into it. And so tonight, you know, after just an output of, you know, a lot of long days, and again, things that have been really great, there's this residual, I think, of someone who just is, you know, could use someone else to just take over right now, and I know that's my job of my mentor. So I went for a walk, and I just ate a really nice salad, and you know, I'll make my way to my hotel and go to bed early. And but I know that there's something I'm not seeing because I get caught in this process a lot, and
I know what it is.
What, Sherry?
Well, now of course there are no guarantees, but this is what I suspect.
Yeah.
So, because what you're describing is you really like to give things 100% of you,
yeah.
Whether it's work or it's a party for friends, a fundraiser for Cantaloupe, whatever it is, you want to give it probably 110%. And you really like it. You really enjoy it.
Right.
And then when it's over, instead of being allowed to hear the, gosh, Tracy, that was fabulous. Well done. Good job. How about a hot bath and an early to bed? Because you have been working hard, and it would be a great time to have a rest. The story that gets started is you put so much into it. Now you're depleted. Now you're exhausted. Was it really worth it? You put all that into that presentation for work, and not that much came back, which, as you've acknowledged, you don't actually know is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that good stuff that could come to you from making that effort gets turned over to karmic conditioning via this conversation about you've done too much, you've overdone.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, the crazy thing is I know it's a story, and I know it's like, oh, my gosh, drop it and just put the energy into the care. But it's just like it's insidious. I mean, it's,
yes. Okay. I have an idea there, too.
Okay, good.
Full of good ideas, aren't I?
Yes.
So because this is such a part of who you are, it's not like you're going to have to wait a really long time to be in this position again.
No.
And so what you can do to avoid the bamboozle is to plan for it. So I would project that what you do now is you put all of the energy into the event, the whatever that is, the whatever, you know, whatever the focus
mm-hmm.
is.
Right.
And then it ends. So you go into, there's the presentation, and then there's no conscious awareness brought to, and then the presentation will be over, and I'll need to, there's the party, and then the party is going to be over. And it's like the world ends right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it doesn't end right there. What that is a transition point. And transition points, as you know, is where karmic conditioning and self-hate can do it to us.
Yes.
So my encouragement going forward is the event goes through, it ends, what you'll do afterwards, you've got food prepared for yourself, you've got a day off to recover, you've got no social plans, you've got an early to bed, and so the event becomes, do the event, the end of the event, take care of the person who put on the event.
Oh, yeah, that's so great to hear, because it's exactly, the event's over, you know, I'm tired or whatever, and the stores go and blah, 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 blah. So really just carve in that time, that transition time,
yep,
as just part of the event.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's not, the event isn't over until you've fully taken in the whole process. And part of that is building up your reserves again and rewarding yourself and enjoying the fruits of your labor and all of that.
Mm. Yes, that's exactly what I needed to hear. It sounds so like, well, of course.
It's always but, of course, as soon as we see it.
Yeah, and yet the self-hate that gets involved just so wants to sabotage that. And
ooh,
so
that's where it gets juice, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you've built up all this good feeling from doing these things, and there it is, you know, rubbing its little imaginary paws together, ready to just suck that life force out of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now you know how not to let that happen.
Yes, that's huge. Okay, great. Thanks. I feel like I just want to keep talking about all these other things, and I think the last thing that I want to share is we played some games on Sunday night for my little fundraiser around giving and receiving, and so it was like a great, you know, little thing about, you know, what it's like to receive. So I need to really just take this conversation and, you know, and that you know, the awareness that I was able to gain on Sunday night too. But it was super fun. I'll just say that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So, and there were some kids there too, Sherry, and that just was, it was incredible to hear from the kids, like what it was like to do a little imagery around giving and what arose, and what we exchanged was, you know, nothing store-bought, like a poem or something handmade, or, but we did all these like fun little games with it, and it was very energy producing, and it tied really well, I think, into the Africa Project, and so really it's all great. And
And you want to be able to receive that, not let it get
siphoned
off by something.
Yeah. The missing
good.
Piece. Yeah.
Very
well,
good. All right. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm so glad I got on.
Me too. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
bye.
Michael and Sherry. Okay, bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Tracy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk to our callers.
Great.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hello, Beth.
How are you doing?
Surprised.
I wasn't you didn't expecting expect to hear that. You're unmuted?
No, I called in late.
Thinking that you could sneak by and we wouldn't know you were there, huh? No.
It doesn't matter if I'm prepared or not, because it's always gets that deer in the headlights kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so there's no sense.
I've been
we can't prepare
looking
for life, can we?
No. Only the illusion of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking recently at I've been kind of living a silent life for about 10 years now.
A silent life?
Yeah. I don't listen to music. I stopped listening. NPR was the last thing to go. I don't read the newspaper. I don't, you know, if I listen to anything, it's kind of a podcast or, you know, wisdom kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. You don't record and listen, I'm guessing.
I still am very good at recording and not so good at listening.
Mm-hmm.
I've got hours of different things recorded.
Mm-hmm. But not you.
I mean, it's easy to record. I just have a hard time listening to it.
Uh-huh. But I'm still not clear. Are the recordings of you talking, or are they recordings of other people saying wise things?
I don't have any wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Is what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So mostly, if you're listening, it's to some other
birds.
Wise person.
Mostly. Well, I mean, I listen to the podcast. I've listened to the archives probably 4 or 5 times.
All the way through. That's impressive.
Yeah. Wow.
That's really impressive.
My work enables me to do that.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And kind of that, you know, it's like, there are very few movies that interest me. There are very few. I mean, it's just like the further and further I go into silence, the less and less I want it.
Yes.
And kind of.
Yes. I know exactly what you mean. I bet that doesn't surprise you. I can listen to something to a radio for about 30 seconds and watch my energy just siphon away, just slide right out of me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it kind of comes from the time I spent at the monastery. And just kind of learning the silence of, and I kind of use the birds, I kind of hear the birds.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm kind of, because even though I'm in silence, it's not always silent internally. In fact, it very seldom is
mm-hmm.
silent
mm-hmm.
internally.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that listening to things like the podcast, enable a greater silence inside, or does it seem not to have that much effect? In other words, when you turn the podcast off, is it just this yammery in there?
There's like differing levels of like just being involved in the yammering and then
mm-hmm.
aware that I'm yammering.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it's real, so it's believable.
Of course, what?
It's like kind of like when something in my life feels very real.
Uh-huh.
A couple weeks ago, I lost 3 accounts in a week.
Ooh.
That was very hard to kind of not believe.
Uh-huh.
It took, you know, a couple of weeks before I was able to say, okay, that's, you know, it's okay, that's not true.
Uh-huh. Well, yes, that it's yes, that happened. It doesn't mean what the voices in the head would like to make it mean.
Like I'm at death's door and I'm going to be starving in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to hire me again. I'm
right.
not going to get any new jobs.
Right. Which I'm guessing has never been your experience, either of those.
Well, times have changed. You can't take uh-huh. anything for granted. Yeah, but it wasn't true.
mm-hmm.
I reposted some signs and got 11 new accounts, which hasn't happened in a long time. But that's all content kind of thing, but it's kind of believable
and
unbelievableness.
Well, right, but it's really important, isn't it? So the karmic conditioning would like you to be miserable over losing 3 accounts, but it doesn't really want to focus that much attention on getting 11 new ones.
No. No.
Yeah. Which, Beth, argues wildly for recording and listening. Because that's exactly the kind, we listen to the stories of loss, lack, and deprivation. Something wrong,
yeah.
not enough, fear, all of that stuff. And
yeah.
we just believe the tone of it. So we don't, right? It can just lull us into, it just has to start down its, and we go energetically and emotionally to the place that it's aimed at taking us. And what we don't listen to enough is the information about what's actually going on. So last week I lost 3 accounts, and karmic conditioning wanted to make that story into but then what happened is, and I got 11 new accounts, and I just wanted to get it on record that all of that ain't it awful stuff actually didn't work out that way at all. In fact, now I have more work than I can do. And when we listen to that kind of information regularly, it makes it more difficult for the voices to get us to believe those same old stories, because we have a different piece of information. We have something to counteract that. But if we never do, if all we ever hear is its channel, yeah, and it has
yeah.
to be in your voice, because it's wonderful. I mean, listening to the archives of the show, it puts us in a practice place, right? And there's something very centering about people who are doing practice together, whether it's an upbeat story or a sad story or somebody's having a hard time or it's really worth it, whatever it is. It's practice, and that tends to bring us back to center. But the information on your life, the specifics on your life, need to be recorded so that you get a fair and balanced picture of what's actually going on in your life. And it's the recording and listening and the conversations with the mentor that have the best chance of giving you that, which is why I'm so nearly rabid on the subject.
It's proactive.
Yes. Yes. Well, it has so many benefits. One, you said a minute ago, I don't have any wisdom. And what I start to respond
well, that's
is
kind of like comes up and it's yeah.
It's knee-jerk. It's knee-jerk. And it's true.
Yeah.
I doesn't have
yeah.
any wisdom. But that doesn't mean that you can't tap that deep well of wisdom, love, and compassion that is you. You can.
Yeah.
And you can have direct access to that. I mean, we can live in that conversation around the clock. And it will definitely put out of business all of this ain't it awful stuff that karmic conditioning wants to drum into our heads. Yeah. So it's really it's really important. And the thing, the couple of things that I like to point out to people is, it's almost free, right? I mean, once you
almost
have a recording device, and if you can keep track of your earbuds, I mean, you're off and running. We have access to the wisdom of the ages.
Yes, yes. In excess, I mean, and kind of a weighted, it's like having a library card.
Pardon me?
It's like having a library card.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And it, in an impersonal way, it's extremely personal. So I said a bit ago, you know, having an awareness coach or being a visiting monk or and having guidance every day, that sort of thing, to have practice be focused on your practice. I mean, it's wonderful when we're focused on the universality of practice and, we're all waking up and we're ending suffering and here are the practice principles and the all of that. But to have it focused on you, getting you out of bed in the morning and making breakfast a joyful occasion for you, and you living in gratitude and abundance and expansiveness all day long as you go around in the world, that's what's available for you. Now,
yes.
We all benefit, of course, because everybody who is joyful is a blessing to all of us. But it's, let's face it, it's way more a blessing to the person who's living in joy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, because, there was a very short period of my life where I lived in abundance. And that's kind of, and what I did with the money was kind of come to the monastery and spend time and kind of learn some tools and so forth. And the privileged environment is such a privilege and so hard to find elsewhere, except in my own practice.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's kind of like the recording from and the listening. It's kind of like doubling my sangha.
Exactly. Exactly. That's very well stated. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. Yeah, there's you.
Yeah.
And there's the mentor. And then there's whoever the mentor is encouraging, supporting, guiding, that sort of thing. And you can all sit around the living room, and it's plenty. Any more really just becomes crowded. You have to offer them tea and make snacks, and you know it's a good sized sangha. And
yeah.
And the thing about it is, then you're never without sangha.
Ha. Yeah. Which kind of always brings me back to thank you.
Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks be to all.
Again and yet again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. You take good care of yourself, huh? Check in.
I just did.
Huh?
I just did.
Yep, yep. And, next time, keep up the good work.
Right,
in other words.
Right. Yeah, second by second.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. All right. Good to talk with you, Beth. Good night.
Good night, Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Got a shy bunch here, Sherry.
I know, we have to do a little talk about.
Okay.
Don't be shy.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, this is Jill in Brooklyn.
Well, hello.
Hi, Sherry.
How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good.
I'm good.
Very
good. Very good. I was inspired to call because I noticed that there is something happening with practice, and the phrase winterizing my practice dropped in. So So I was calling for support in winterizing my practice.
Oh, very good. Tell us a little bit about the components of that. That sounds exciting.
I know. And also I came up with the phrase holidaying my practice.
Holidaying. Whoa, boy, holidaying. That is a lot of what goes on in the world around this time of year, isn't it? Holidaying.
It's very true, yes. Yes, it's very true. Well, what I noticed is that, you know, suddenly I got colder and darker, and it sort of took away, it felt like, some of the little places where I was normally encouraged to practice. So, you know, I live in a big city, and oftentimes the only place I can be alone is outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would record on my way, you know, to catch the subway or whatever. And I noticed lately, like, it's a little too cold to hold my recorder. You know, like, so these little things are, like, sort of starting to slip in about, you know, it gets darker early, and so that's sort of throwing off. It feels like the time that I used to sort of do these other practice things. And so it just occurred to me today, like, wow, so slowly these little things are disappearing. And so I got kind of excited about this idea of, you know, finding ways to practice in a slightly different way. That's sort of in winter, you know.
Yeah, I love that.
In the dark.
I love the spirit of that. The spirit of that. So what are you coming up with? Because I gotta tell you, Jill. Now, you know, we're both kind of privileged people, and so we can have this sort of conversation, right? And I understand a lot of people can't do this, but I have a lot of the same stuff that goes on for me, and my happiest place to live is outside, and I do not enjoy cold, dark, wet, rainy winter. I just don't. I wish I could be a better sport, and the only way that I can really manage to get through it is to remind myself that everything in nature has to rest, and this is how nature rests and rejuvenates herself, and that sort of thing. And so I can make peace with it a little bit. But today I went out and began to assemble for myself the things that I'll need to be able to wear, to be able to continue to be outside in the same way, no matter what the weather is. Because otherwise, it's like that gal that I taught to meditate, and then I didn't see her again for 2 months. And when I saw her again, I asked her what happened, and she said, I sprained my ankle, and so I couldn't meditate. And it's like, you know, that kind of thing can happen to us if we're not careful.
Yes.
You know, well, it got cold and dark, and so I couldn't practice.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
funny
what do you find
that today? Well, I wrote down fingerless gloves.
Yeah,
I thought about that.
When you said that about holding the recorder, I saw those little beauties.
I think, and then I had this image of like my poor little fingertips being very cold. But then I thought, well, maybe I could get sort of a microphone and that headphone microphone thing, because right now I hold the recorder up to my mouth. But if I had one of those things, then I could just keep my mittens on and just sort of move the thing over rather than holding it outside, or maybe I could just let it hang or something. So that was something that I thought of maybe just looking at. But the fingerless gloves.
Are there earmuffs that are, I know the Bose kinds of things, but they're not exactly earmuffs. But are there earmuffs that, if you didn't mind what you looked like, you could put the ear flap cap on over your earbuds.
That's a great idea, though. If there's some sort of, headphones, that's also earmuffs.
Mm-hmm.
If not, let's
create them.
Okay.
And we'll at least have two customers. Yeah.
And if I make them in different colors, I might buy more than one. So
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so
a great idea.
And I got a thing going with my recorder where I can just do everything by feel in my pocket.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Which also can help.
Uh-huh.
Because you're in a lot colder climate than I am. I mean, fingerless gloves would be a real winner for me. Where you are, that could get painful after a while.
Yeah, it gets down. It starts to be. I mean, usually I record for about 10 or 15 minutes in the morning outside, and so it does get a little cold, but that's so funny. So I think I might, because I do have a recorder, one of the things I love about it is that the buttons are quite large. In fact, I bought it at the monastery, and they are a different shape. And so I do feel like with that one, I might be able to. So when I get another one, I'm going to look into that. That's a really good idea. That's a really good idea, because then I can just keep it, you know, keep it in the pocket. Why even bring it out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just keep it in the pocket. Yeah, that's a good idea. And the other thing was just, like, coming up with some game to warm myself up. I haven't quite figured out what that might be, but just, you know, because even when I'm in my apartment, there's something that's sort of cold. I don't know. Mm. It just feels like, you know, so some sort of, you know, recording and listening, warm-up game, or, I don't know, run around the apartment a few times before I do it, or, I don't know, I'll have to think about something like that. But because it does seem like that when I get home, there is also, I don't know, there's something about it that makes me just want to get a bunch of blankets and, like,
well,
stay
to me,
still.
Yeah, to me what it is that when we're identified with egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, it's a contracted, kind of a closed-down, closed-in feeling. And when we're disidentified, then it's, it's open and expansive and that sort of thing. It's easy to feel open and expansive when we're nice and warm.
Yeah.
But when it's cold, I suspect that for the system, there's too much of a connection between, it's kind of like shivering and anxiety go too much together.
Yeah.
You know, the sensations in the body can get labeled in ways that really are inaccurate, but don't serve us. So, it'd be a great kind of paying attention exercise that I would set the alarm for every 15 minutes or whatever it is, or every time I realize I'm cold, then I just stop and do some jumping jacks or something like that and warm myself up, and also it's a mindfulness practice at the same time. Of course, conditioning says, oh, well, that's going to be a lot of fun, but there are very few things that I do in a cold, dark evening that wouldn't lend themselves to doing jumping jacks periodically. Whatever I'm
absolutely
doing, I can set it aside for that long. And it feels like it's such a, it's companionable and it's fun, and it produces a sense of mindfulness and bringing conscious awareness to something that's difficult for a person, and we can support the person in.
Or even dancing, like having some sort of winter dance that I can sort of start to incorporate in my day that will just sort of remind me, even if I can only do like one little tiny shoulder move or something because I'm like at my desk or something that will just, remind me of it. And because, I notice that too, now I'm outside and my shoulders immediately go up because I'm trying to, it's like this reflexive thing where it's like, okay, I'm cold, I'm contracting. That you said it perfectly. And I think that's helping conditioning in some way sort of get in there in ways it didn't have before.
The thing that reminds me of is, and I think a lot of people, again, I am sensitive to the fact that not everybody can afford the same things, but as we are affording things, not to let karmic conditioning talk us into saving money through making the human uncomfortable.
Right.
Because that's the kind of thing that would be very popular with self-hate. So it costs too much money to get you the slippers that would make your feet happy when you're at home.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, the vest that you could wear around even when you're in that sort of thing, you know. So talking us into deprivation is a big part of its plan.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I can see where that could definitely come in. Yeah, I just was talking to this woman, and she was so cold in her apartment, and I said, why don't you call the landlord and tell him that the heat's not working? And she went on this whole thing about how, oh, well, there's people around the world that live like this, and, you know, why should I, you know, whatever, I can handle it or something. I was just like, oh, my goodness, you know. Like, just call the landlord. So yeah, that's definitely a place. Yeah, that would make my feet very happy. Some nice slippers. Yeah.
Mhm. And you know, if we are concerned about that kind of thing, you know, people are cold. Well, we can make ourselves warm, and we can work on a way to assist other people to be warm as well.
Yeah.
It's that mentality of I need to be deprived because other people are deprived. Well, let's look at how we can all not be deprived.
Right. Yeah. Start here and then there and here and there. Yeah.
Mhm. All right. Well, keep me posted.
All right.
Come up with
I will.
Yeah. Who knows? You know, we may start looking forward to winter.
Yes.
as our great practice time. So
right.
Happen.
Or at least looking forward to winterizing practice. I think that's
practice. Yes.
Like
that's
I think that's something that I can sort of plan on happening.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. Very exciting. All right, well, it was
all
great
right.
talking
Thank
to
you.
You. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
And welcome back to Open Air. We have another caller here, Sherry.
Perfect.
What?
Next caller.
Oh.
You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Surprise.
Sorry, did you hear me?
Surprise, you're on the air.
This is Mary Jane in Palo Alto.
How do you do it?
Sorry, I just was not paying attention, I guess.
You sounded very excited, that's all. We're happy that you're excited.
Oh, good. I guess I wanted to call in, and I guess I was the one thing I was noticing, and it was that I just had a little kind of, you know, that little beginning of feeling low.
I was just
noticing that, and curious about it because I usually it's like or I don't want to feel this way or. You know, and then I thought, oh, maybe I can use it as a, like, why do we even get depression? You know, I was thinking, like, maybe, you know, I'm just letting myself know, like, oh, maybe you want to slow down a little bit or give yourself a little extra break today or, you know, to use it
internet to view it a little differently.
Yes.
Rather than something bad to be avoided.
Right. Well, two things you say that to me are really important for all of us. One is not to assume that I know anything about this just because there's a label attached to it.
So being
willing to explore it and then being open to whatever we see about that. So if it is a signal that, well, maybe I'm just tired or I just don't have a lot of energy today or that sort of thing, then I'm willing to act on that. And actually, there's a third piece of it, it seems to me, which is I'm willing not to learn anything about this.
If I don't analyze an issue, what would I do?
Exactly. Yeah, so because the temptation is, okay, well, if you're going to look at it and you've decided it's not that, well, then as soon as you decide what it is, then we can approach it every time from that label.
Mm.
And we don't want to do that either. Right? So it's always being there and being open to the sensations that are there, noticing the label that gets put on it, questioning whether that's true, just being responsive to whatever is there.
Yeah, so what would that look like? Like just noticing, just tuning into myself a bit more closely and...
Yes.
Saying, oh, okay. Or doing it, like, who's here? You know, sometimes I'll ask who's here, you know, in terms of young parts or... like in the timeout for parents, I've been using that a lot, the four-part, like, recognizing a need and then what are you needing and then give yourself that need, whatever it is.
Yeah, and with that little person that we can hear in the background,
okay,
something's going on with her, and what we're conditioned to do is figure it out, so that we can, you know, whatever. It's wonderful to be attuned to her, to be sensitive to her, but if we start piling up ideas about what this means and that means, and now I have to do this, and then we're creating, here's a brand new opportunity for you in life, but conditioning wants to take it right down the same track that it takes everything, so that you can get to the point of knowing so much about her, which is hard to do at her age, but it's so much about her that you no longer actually have to attend to her. Right? That's what conditioning is going for. That's why, so with us, you know, we have this whole set of labels and beliefs and assumptions and conclusions, all these things that we've figured out, all this stuff that we know that enables us not to be.
Yes.
So for karmic conditioning, of course, that's a great thing, but that's really not where we want to live.
No, and I can see, your response answers the 10 other issues I wanted to raise, so I'm glad that you, it's amazing how one issue, I mean, I didn't even think that it would tie in with all the things that are heavy, but the one thing that comes, I mean, I guess the story, well, I guess this is just what it does, is it says, oh, well, then, you know, if you're trying to have a regular bedtime, that's something, you know, then you're not attending to her needs. Or, you know, like even for myself, I give myself a regular bedtime. I mean, I find it's helpful to have some structure.
Yes, absolutely. And we know then, because, right, on either side, karmic conditioning wants to plant a flag, right? So you never get to have a regular bedtime because it's just, you know, jerking you around from this to that to this to that to this to that. Or you have to be in bed at, or your life is ruined.
That's, I should just... like a fortune cookie. It's like, or your life is ruined at the end
If it's at the end of a sentence, then I know it's conditioning.
Yes. So we want some kind of rhythm in our lives, right? We want to go with life, and a lot of that's based on your natural rhythm. Some people left to themselves would stay up all night and sleep all day, which is great until you have, say, a job or children, and then we adjust and we accommodate. So you can know that it really works well for you to be in bed by X, and you can also know that as much effort as you put into that, sometimes it's not going to work. And we have to learn to recognize when it doesn't work because it really doesn't work, and when it doesn't work because we're being scammed and sabotaged.
So it all requires being present rather than this is what this means, you know, going into that.
Yeah, that meaning business. Oh, golly gee. If we could just get it that nothing means anything or nothing means nothing, a better way to say it. There's just no such thing as meaning. Which, of course, would explain why karmic conditioning is so set on people figuring out the meaning of everything, right? So there isn't one. But if you have to figure it out, then your whole life gets wasted in this nonsense conversation. You see what I mean?
I'm 80% there. I think sometimes I think there's some part of me that likes meaning making.
Yes. And that part is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Because it is such a way to get us to go off and noodle with it. And, of course, as we know, sometimes that feels innocuous. But what it's really setting up is the ability for it to do that even when we don't want to.
Okay. Well, this is definitely bringing up stuff, so I'm sure it's good to look at.
And you can
there's some resistance to this.
You gals can listen again and apply.
What'd you say? Sorry, listen again and apply.
Oh, that you can listen to it again. Because as you say, when it starts bringing stuff up, then we can know that karmic conditioning is getting triggered and that it's rich. It's a rich place for us to be looking.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it sounds like she's lost interest in our conversation. So does that seem to be true?
That it's lost interest?
She.
Evie.
She's lost interest.
She's more interested, actually. I don't know. Well, she's having her own conversation now. She's really stretching her vocal cords.
All right. Well, we'll let her sing, and we will say goodnight to both of you gals.
Sounds good. Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane and friend. That was fun, Sherry. Yes.
The young Sangha.
Yes, young Sangha. That's great. I appreciated all those reminders in that conversation. I will apply those myself.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Thanks so much for being here tonight.
Oh, is it that time?
The time is exactly 6:00 right now.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea. Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
How quickly it passes. Talk to you soon, huh?
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.